All right, thank you. Okay, this is the May 11th American Rescue Plan Act Special Committee meeting. And if you could call the roll, Clerk Feaster.
Criswell.
Here.
Corcoran. Levine.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Sperry.
Here.
Great, thank you so much. Legislator Corcoran has another commitment tonight, so he will not be joining us. Thank you very much for answering the questions. Very informative, and I think it will give us a good basis for some discussion tonight. And I wanna thank the executive staff for answering as well. I think that's great that we can have shared goals and visions and trying to see where we're gonna spend the rest of this money. What I'd love to get out of this evening is at least a general trajectory of where we want to head with this 10 million bucks that we've got left or so, 10 million or so. And I think that going over these questions will be really eye-opening to try and figure out what we're looking to fund and what are our priorities. So I wanted to ask, would it be appropriate actually if we went out of order and actually let Amanda do her presentation first. And then Amanda, you could jump off and you don't have to listen to us do all our back and forth. And actually it would be really good information for us going into the conversation. Are you okay with that? Committee, everybody okay with that? Guests on the line, March, Nate, Molly, all good, Joanna? Okay, great, thank you. All right, it's all yours, Amanda.
Thank you, and happy to be with you all again. I know we had a little bit of this discussion last fall, but there's been a lot of time, and you've been hard at work over these months, thinking about the ways to best program this money. I prepared some slides. They were provided to you as with your agenda packet, but if it's okay, if that's okay with you, I can present from those and have those.
Please.
Okay. All right. And now I will, if I can be given permission to share my screen.
From my point, it looks like I've given permission already.
It says host disabled participant screen.
Okay. Let me see here. Okay, try that now.
All right, and now here comes the part where I have to make sure it's the right thing. Okay. All right, you can now see that the PDF. Okay, great. Okay, so this is the evolution of the proposal that we presented last fall that was in the initial kind of concept from last summer from ARPA having to do with food systems and food security. So again, just as some framing kind of information, and I know we all know this in many ways, but food security is something that has always been with us, but is something that is, even more prevalent now in our community. And there are various estimates of those levels of food insecurity. There's a paper by Patterns for Progress, which puts that level for Ulster County at about 10%. However, that's generally considered to be low. The New York State data pre-pandemic has an upstate average of about 20%. So there are many professionals who are working in this field who do feel that that level, even for Ulster County, is higher. But even when you take the low end, it's a startling figure at about 18,000 individuals who are food insecure in Ulster County, and about 7,000 of those individuals who must rely on only the emergency food network since they are not eligible for other programs like WIC or SNAP. how I came to this was through some of my involvement with Project Resilience. And that program at one time was feeding approximately 5% of the county population. There were various situations and reasons why people were receiving meals, but it was a good snapshot into some of the barriers that a lot of our residents and community members are facing. And again, why is this important to think about through the ARPA lens? Well, we know that there are individuals and certain members and communities in our society that have been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19, both economically and physically, and in health indicators. And the population that is food insecure is that population in many regards. So this is something that has both health impacts and also economic impacts. So in trying to take a more holistic view of this, I tend to be a bit of a kind of a systems thinker. So, I came to thinking about, okay, so if this is about food systems, what is a food system, right? And it's complicated, right? Because it's not just a social services delivery of food. That's not really what it's about. It's about thinking about some of the weaknesses that we saw during COVID that had to do with supply chain, that had to do with agricultural production, that perhaps had to do with the economic system, that the food system is really all the things that create the food that we need in society from day to day. So that's growing, harvesting, processing, packaging, transporting, marketing, consuming, and disposing of food waste. Thinking about what that food system could be, it's another term here is a community food system. And this is, I think, what everyone would agree to be, to say what the ideal is that our food system is as much local as possible. And again, some of the weaknesses and the breakdowns that we saw, especially during the initial COVID-19 shutdown and kind of the impacts there, even those of us who don't deal in this professionally learned a lot about how kind of far away our food system was and how kind of, centralized it was into just a few manufacturing processing facilities. That's something that we were hearing about all the time, about one meat processing plant shutting down and what that was doing to the supply chain across the country. So thinking about a community food system, in which as much of that is done locally, because that's going to be hopefully economically beneficial to the community, and also have a greater social benefit. One more term kind of before we really jump into the rest of this, and that's an emergency food system. So if the food system is the whole entire thing, kind of soup to nuts, about food, agriculture production, the emergency food system is getting down to like just that part of the food system that is necessary to address hunger and food insecurity among certain individuals and families. So these are just some framing concepts to think about this project. All right. So again, with that last term, thinking about an emergency food system, right, is what is it about a food system that fails? That then creates food insecurity. And it can be a variety of different reasons, and they might happen at different kind of places along this bigger food system. But it could be that the food is not economically accessible. It's not physically accessible. That can have to do with something like transportation failure, road washouts, a large storm, not available due to supply chain failure. It was something I was just alluding to, or not available due to a donation failure. And that's more of the emergency food network somehow failing and breaking down. And as we think about the emergency food system, there's kind of two timeframes in that system. There's both the ongoing need, the day-to-day need of folks in that system, and then there's emergencies. And emergencies can be the uptick that we saw perhaps, you know, from COVID, or even something like the recent ice storm and power outages. You know, that can be another type of emergency situation that we need to be ready for, that the emergency feeding system needs to be have kind of planned for. Okay. This is the last concept slide, I promise. So what's a resilient food system? Again, resilience being the capacity to absorb, adapt, or transform in response to a disruption, and a resilient food system is able to provide that source of nutritious, safe, and accessible food despite disturbances. So as we apply that concept of resilience to food systems, we can think about how are we going to plan for and create a system that can withstand maybe disruption to production, maybe disruption to supply chain, maybe physical disruption through an emergency event. How can we kind of be ready for that? Okay. So in thinking about all of this, I think it does kind of come down to something that's pretty kind of straightforward and makes sense as far as what needs to be done from the county's perspective. We need to ensure that we're meeting the ongoing need, and that I have some specific ideas around that and how we can support all the organizations that are out there every day, making sure food gets to people, and also planning to support them in a more strategic way, looking at what the needs are across the county of all those organizations, because there's a wide variety of kind of scale that they're working at, and also capacity. You have some really large organizations with professional staff, like maybe Rondout Valley or People's Place, Community Action. And then you also have small kind of maybe a small closet or a small pantry in a community building in other places. And those are important community service providers also. So we need to think about ways to meet that ongoing need. We need to think about ways to be ready to feed people during a disaster, during an emergency situation, and have done the adequate planning in order to be able to do that. And then we need to move forward to think about how we're going to improve the overall food system resilience. So the first two things, items here, are more about the emergency feeding system, the ongoing need, and the emergency needs, and then stepping back to thinking about the bigger food system. So this proposal, that first kind of focus area of meeting the ongoing need would be to create kind of like a working group that would support and meet regularly the emergency food providers across Ulster County. And through that effort, do a needs assessment with those groups and come up with a more kind of countywide look at what they're doing, what they would want to be doing, what they need to be doing, and where those barriers are. So we can think at least the county scale about how best to support them moving forward. And so that would be kind of the first thing that needs to be done. In that process, these are the folks who would be part and parcel to an emergency feeding plan. So use that group and the support of those emergency feeding organizations to update the draft emergency feeding plan. The next part would be to think about a kind of more of a countywide resilience of food systems, emergency feeding systems. And I'm going to show some examples of what those reports kind of look like here in a moment. And then the last step is to think about, okay, how do we create an action plan and fund some priority projects? So one of the challenges and one of the reasons why this proposal is very kind of heavy on planning and coordination is that there's a lot of need in Ulster County, and there are a lot of organizations and committees kind of working on this in some kind of way, right? So the left-hand column on the screen are county agencies, nonprofits, regional nonprofits, small local nonprofits who are working on emergency feeding issues in the county. And you can see they span a lot of different sizes and scales. And this list actually does not include the 20 plus actual pantry locations and pantry providers in the county. On the right-hand side are committees that are meeting regularly to think about access to healthy foods, emergency feeding, health and wellness, all these kind of things that come together here. There's a lot, right? And there's a need for coordination here. It's not like a brand new effort. It's really kind of pulling these people together, taking that county perspective, seeing where those needs are, and having some kind of plan as to how to best move forward. Because that's truly what we're lacking, is that there's really no view from the county scale of what those needs are. So to that end, there's two major portions that I've kind of conceived of and that we've talked through here, as far as that using that budget number of about $350,000, which was the initial funding, if folks have looked back at those initial project proposals. The initial project proposal, which would still be supported here, would be to really kick off a food systems council to be convened by Cooperative Extension of Ulster County. And that would be that biggest circle, right? So thinking about the entire countywide food system. That works well with some other efforts that are happening regionally, and it would be a really good platform to bring folks together to think about the county level. However, within that, I think kind of the first and most immediate point of business would be to convene an emergency feeding working group, really get the organizations together who are working at that response level, and bring them together, support them, and again, figure out that, do that needs assessment and figure out an action plan. Cornell Cooperative Extension at that systems level, they've been developing a food systems map, which is a very rich, data-rich map-based GIS resource that covers beyond Ulster County, but they were it's a unique resource, and they very much were looking for a little bit of the funding from here going to continuing to supporting that. And then I think as part of the planning and support efforts, you update the emergency feeding plan, you draft a food system resilience report, and that really focuses on the food system and the possible different types of hazards, ice storm, flooding event, power outages, pandemic, all these types of things, and how we need to be prepared in order to meet that emergency need, and then, you know, create our action plan with our priority projects. The second part of it, which I think is it's very important, right? Because everybody is always careful to say we don't want to do planning just because we're doing planning. We want to make sure that this moves to action. The Community Foundation of the Hudson Valley has a farm fresh food grant program that they've been running for over 10 years. They have a lot of experience in administering grants to smaller organizations in order to build capacity around emergency feeding and also food systems. I think they have been receptive, at least to the idea of having an Ulster County specific fund, which would we could then link right back to whatever the priority action items are across the county, and then direct some of the ARPA funding to that contract with the community foundation, and then work with them to administer that fund. I think there's some very practical and also some of benefits of partnering with the community foundation on that. They can accept grant funding from other sources. They can also seek grant funding from other places. And they have a lot of experience working in just this subject area for more than 10 years. I think it would be a modest administrative kind of fee for that work, but there would be a lot of value added by hopefully partnering with them. So again, this is, it's really two pieces to it. The convening, the having the planning documents, really getting our hands around what the needs are, and then setting up the way in which we can then, once we have this better vision of this, fund some priority projects. And then because this is a 3-year term, we'd be continuing to convene those food organizations to build capacity and to support them through this. As far as partners here, Cornell Cooperative Extension for the food systems, but also Ulster Corps, because they are very much working as that linking entity to so many nonprofits and agricultural gleaning operations that really, they know what's going on the ground in Ulster County. So I think it would really be the right people to help support those emergency feeding groups. Just to be more explicit about how this proposal has come together, I had stakeholder conversations with more than 15 different organizations and individuals, ranging throughout the county staff to multiple people at the City of Kingston, Cooperative Extension, Ulster Corps, and then regionally through the Community Foundation, Farm Hub, the Hudson Valley Food System Coalition, which is a group that's really gearing up to work on regional food system issues, Novo Foundation, emergency feeding organizations. There's also some really neat work that's been going on, especially in Baltimore, when it comes to food systems resilience. And it is a model and a resource that's worth taking a look at if this is an interest to you. I also spent a lot of time in the project resilience data, looking at how enrollment in that program compared to what we know about vulnerability across the community, and to see if any kind of trends emerge there. So I'm happy to take any questions or if there's any other discussion.
Thank you. This is terrific. Do you want to talk about this slide, or do you want us to jump in?
Oh, yeah. So this was, I forgot about this slide. I apologize.
No worries.
But just, this is very just summary and thinking about how the goals of ARPA, and I think I've captured most of these, but, providing a support to the food system also has economic benefits. You're supporting the frontline kind of emergency service providers in doing their job. But you're also making sure that the people who need it are getting assistance, and that we're setting this up to have a plan so that this could live beyond the ARPA funding and look for other sources. So
that's great. Thank you. I have a couple questions, and then I'll open it up to committee members as well. And I think you were just touching on that, actually. I always go to the money, you know. So thinking about the 3-year spending for ARPA, I know we have a time frame for our ARPA spending. Would this actually fit within our time frame? That's like a Nate question, or
it is a Nate question, but I believe it would, because it would be encumbered with contracts, and then we could you know, there would be some flexibility even with the implementation fund. If there were projects that were just no-brainers and super high priority, we could kind of fast track those. But I'll let Chris and Nate speak to that. So,
yeah, I'm happy to go. So it's obligated by the end of 2024, expended by the end of 2026. So we have till the end of 2026, essentially. We'd have to figure out if we need to be obligated, let's say, by the end of 2023, so that we can have everything in the expenditure stages. But the time frame is there to make it work, as long as, you know, it moves. We have 3 years to work with.
Okay, great. And then my other question about the budget is, are there any pieces of this budget that would then ultimately require county funding to continue the process on?
Not beyond the scope that was shown here.
Okay, so I just want to make sure. Okay. Great. Those were my questions. Anybody else on the committee have any questions? Yeah, Legislator Sperry.
Thank you so much for that presentation. That was really great. And I've been appointed to the Cornell Cooperative Extension Board, so I've been under the hood with them quite a bit. And there's a lot of really great ideas. And I know one of the things that we've been trying, or there's been conversations about trying to support a meat processing facility in the county. And then there's been a recent it's not just about getting food to people, it's getting the food grown too. And one of the things that I would love to maybe talk a little bit more about is, how do we support our farmers? And I feel like, and maybe this is a larger conversation for whomever is going to be on this committee, but like, if there's a way that we could use some of this funding to like purchase CSA shares, right? And like, purchase the CSA shares through the farmers, and then get those into the hands of the pantries or the distribution centers. So that way we're supporting both the farmers and we're getting fresh food out. I know that I managed the Rosendale Farmers Market for 6 years. And one of the things that we tried to do every year is we would either put like a bin out on the table and say, you know, ask people to donate money to like pay it forward. And so if somebody came to the market and they didn't have enough money, or what we were doing was if somebody wanted to get SNAP tokens and they were authorizing, we would give them an additional 5 tokens, just because that was part of a pay it forward program. And, you know, I think there is still a lot of a stigma situation. So like, somehow making people feel way more comfortable in, you know, I mean, obviously if people are on a fixed income, or if they're on a budget, or if they're using food stamps or SNAP, most of the time they're going to go to the grocery store because they can get way more for their money. But if there's a way to kind of like educate people and destigmatize, you know, that type of resource, I think that that's a really good connection to make too. But it's also about getting people to the farms.
But these are all exactly the reasons why there needs to be a food system council, right? Yeah. Because there are all these parts to it. And, you know, Cornell is perfectly, they are the people, right, who are poised to convene this group.
Correct.
Right. And again, having that one kind of big circle, thinking about the whole food system, and then having some folks who are ready to drill down into the emergency feeding portion of it. So I think that the big food systems council, and then the emergency feeding kind of task working group. But
Yeah, and the other thing I just want to mention is that I met with the new ED at Community Action with Tim Wiedemann, and they have a lot of different needs over there, and they could totally be supported because they're doing great work, you know, and they serve as a community kitchen, you know, for a lot of different people. And, you know, they're in Kingston. It would be wonderful if we could like replicate what they're doing in the southern part of the county so that they're, you know, they're not being stretched too thin.
Right. And yep, that's another thing. And again, why, you know, we have some great partners poised right there. There's a lot of resources, but really taking that look at, okay, I just read one paper that was talking about food insecurity in the county, but they threw out a statistic that 70% of single mothers in Ellenville, in the village of Ellenville, are living under the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like, okay, well, let's make sure that we're doing things geographically spread out. And maybe, you know, if we have a lot of philanthropic money right now in Kingston, like maybe the ARPA money needs to be directed other places. And I think we have to be strategic about it. And I think we could get to a place where then the implementation becomes a little bit more more that way.
So. Yeah, I agree.
Thank you. And I know Chris is going to speak to this in a little bit, but I want to recognize Legislator Lopez and then Legislator Levine.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate the presentation, first and foremost. And, you know, a good thing that came out of COVID, if you can find a good thing, is that it shed a lot of light on the food insecurities that we're experiencing. You know, I wasn't aware of how significant it was. You know, I participated in a number of fundraisers in order to stock our food pantries, and they were cleaned out like in the matter of hours sometimes. And I know that Ellenville Hospital also has, they give away fresh vegetables that are grown right there in the prison. And you know, what appears to be a lot of vegetables that they provide, they're gone in hours, and there's like a line out the door, you know, waiting for it. So, you know, a program like this, I think, creates a stable system and a consistent system that would, you know, address, you know, the issues that we're facing here. And it's something that I would love to learn more about, and definitely behind, a program like this. So again, I appreciate that presentation, and I look forward to, you know, working with you, you know, in order to make something like this, you know, come to fruition.
Thank you. Legislator Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, thank you very much for the presentation, Amanda. Very enlightening. My question would be just in terms of, I know, and you actually, I think briefly kind of in the last answer, I think to Legislator Sperry's question, got into a little bit more of the demographics and geographical issues facing food insecurity. I was just going over the, you know, the presentation. I was hoping you might be able to give us a little bit more detail, if possible, just in terms of the geographic distribution of the food insecurity of our, you know, of our population. I know you had mentioned, you know, mothers in Ellenville. Would you be able to kind of give us a little bit more information on, in terms of where is it uniformly spread out throughout the county, or are we really seeing specific, you know, hotspots of insecurity that we really need to be focusing on?
That's a very good kind of driving question. And it's one of the reasons why I think the food systems mapping work is actually really important. And I'm just gonna try to talk for a second and pull it up, which is kind of, kind of risky, because I want you to see what they've done so far in this. And it's rather.
if you want a minute, I can get Deputy Executive Kelly to chime in with what I know he was going to talk about.
You know me so well, Chair. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So this is fed out of a conversation with both Chair Criswell, but also Chairwoman Bartels on community kitchens. So Legislator Sperry is already engaged with Ulster County Community Action. So Nate reached out to them, and we actually have a proposal for a community kitchen. It's partially to refurbish what their existing kitchen is for about $180,000, and then expanded programming. They're also interested in doing one in Ellenville because they've already got a footprint in Ellenville. So this would hit the geographic diversity that I know we've all been talking about. I know that there is space in Ellenville. We have the Trudy Farber Resnick building where it is county owned. I don't know if it is suitable for this, but it feels like it could be. It is meant to be a satellite kind of office for county services in the southern end of the county. I would imagine that it's slightly underutilized at this point, especially coming out of COVID. So there might be an opportunity to do that there. It is like a 5 or 6 page proposal. Nate, do you think it's okay to share this?
I don't think it's complete. I think it gives us an idea of what they're doing. I think we can go back to the executive director and ask for a final version. And I think then we can do something.
Okay, so I know that we could certainly get behind doing this project from the executive side. I know that I don't know how you want to work this. Like, should we ask Ulster Community Action to come in, or should we have a working group work with them on maybe looking at the two sites? I'm open to what a proper pathway is here, or should we look at also other potential community partners in this kind of effort here? So I really am open to this, but Ulster County Community Action, they're already involved in doing this type of operation. So I don't know, certainly open to it, but excited about the prospect here.
Thank you. Amanda, was that enough time for you? You're on mute now. Do I need to sing a song to give you a little cover here?
Like dead air, right? So I did. Oh, it's working. Thank goodness. It just took a little while to load, because otherwise I was going to
tell you. You spared everybody my vocal talents.
Okay, so this is going to give you, I'm going to take the screen again and hope that this works. All right. CCE actually got a grant from the Community Foundation of the Hudson Valley through that Farm Fresh Food funding. And they have worked so far to start this Hudson Valley Food Systems Map. It still has some work that needs to be done here, but what it is it's a GIS map. So this is all the data that they've put behind this. It's available online, but where it starts to get more interesting than it is right now is where you can get into starting to add things to the map. So this is like the farming. It usually looks better than this. I don't know why I can't dock this thing right now, the layers list, but so there's a couple dozen different layers where you can start to look at where farms are, where food distributors are, where farmers markets are. And then, and the reason why I think this pertains to your question, Legislator Levine, is that you can move into looking at some of the demographic data and looking at, you know, where are the pockets of more vulnerable population versus where are the food service providers, and start putting that all, you know, it's on the map, so we can start really conceptualizing how what we're doing and whether or not it's really getting to the people who need it. So some of the layers, they have demographic and census data in here, you know, percentage of rent burden households, food programs, service areas, USDA, food access research, social vulnerability, So these are a lot of the census data products and the other demographic products that are used for funding also. So it's important to be using these types of data products when you're doing your kind of planting and planning, and hopefully when you're doing your grant writing, when you're looking for other funding sources too. So then we have also kind of environmental data layers, health, CDC, stuff like that. I think that's important that that could be actually expanded, because the health department really tunes into Robert Wood Johnson and what works for health and all those indicators. So thinking about how things could impact or improve indicators in various places in the county. So that just gives you a little taste of what this might be. And this will get better and easier to use and easier to do analysis with. I'll see if I can turn on some more data layers here too. Maybe some demographic. So, but just to get a, if folks can, you know, feel like they.
Is this available?
Yes, I can.
Anybody go see it? Yeah, that'd be great. If you would send that to us, then people can play around at their
leisure. I'll drop it in the chat. I think this should work.
That would be great. And then if there's no other specific questions about this exact proposal, I'd love to move us along so we can actually talk about this in the framework of our larger conversation about funding and our priorities, because this squarely sits in what has clearly been identified as one of our priorities. So I think looking at this, looking at the kitchens and having a conversation about what that actually might mean in terms of numbers and how do we feel as a committee for contributing to that. And yes, I see you, Deputy Executive Contreras.
Yes. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to see if Legislator Criswell, I know we spoke about this the other night at the Behavioral Health Task Force, but I did want to, before you're moving on, since you're moving on to the big picture on future resolutions, put in a plug for the Mental Health in Schools program that we wanted to propose to you all. Is this the right time to do that?
Sure.
Or
sure, why not?
Okay. So just to catch
up. Can I hang on 1 second? Sure. I just want to thank you, Amanda, for that great presentation. That was really, really terrific, very informative. And are you available if any of the legislators have questions, they can contact you directly?
Yep, and thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Joanna, thank you.
Yes. So just to catch everybody up, we did speak about this a little bit at the Behavioral Health Task Force last month, where Legislator Criswell is a part of. But we have been working, our mental health department has been working with the school districts to develop a proposal to address mental health in schools. And we wanted to put it forth as a resolution next month with a fuller presentation. So this is really just a very quick teaser and a heads up. But big picture, what it is that there would be five teams of two people, a clinical social worker and a care manager. And those five teams would be placed in all of the school districts throughout the county. So the idea is one team in Kingston, and then the other four teams would split two districts each. But basically, they would work with the youth on goals related to mental health, trauma, substance abuse, if they're having academic issues, whatever it is. What really came out of the conversations with the school districts is that the youth need supports that are not just clinical in nature. It's really about whatever is impacting them that may be leading to their mental health issues. So whether it's access to transportation or food, clean laundry, or even counseling, we should be equipped to do that as well. So that's just the broader picture. The focus that they highlighted was middle schools. So that's where we would want to target these teams. And we would also contract with a nonprofit to actually hire the folks and deploy them and coordinate the program. So that's just, I think that's pretty much the big picture, but just a teaser, and we will come back to you with more information next month.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. And I just wanted to say two things about that. One is that it is in an area that we have not directly funded yet with ARPA funding. You know, we have not done like youth support programming specifically. And then also this was talked about during the last session. There was a, a proposal by another legislator that had a sort of more strict rules around what would happen. And we ended up voting it down because I think it was not quite the right fit. But the sentiment, I think, was very much there with the full legislature to address mental health issues, especially with this age group. I think there's, I'm a big believer in preventative medicine. And I think that this is preventative medicine for our young people. If we can intervene at an early stage, help them with critical traumatic issues, I think we are serving ourselves as a county. You know, we're really helping our youth to have strength and support as they move forward into young adulthood. And I think that it's a really critical time in many young people's lives. And I think the more support that we can give them, the better. So I'm very much behind a proposal like this. So thank you for bringing it up tonight. I appreciate that. And looking forward to seeing it fleshed out and presented fully. So thank you. All right, unless anybody has any questions for Deputy Executive Contreras, I'd like to just move us along to the questions that we've all filled out and kind of go over this. So I think I'd like to take them a little bit out of order, if that's all right with everybody. I think I'd like to actually start with question number two. That has to do with the areas or needs that we should address that haven't received funding yet. Is that all right if we start there and then we'll kind of bounce around a little bit? Because it has, it directly has to do with what we just heard presented from Amanda Laval. So it's pretty clear that food security is very, very high on that list for priorities. And as well as workforce development. So those two came in at four mentions in the categories, and I thought that was interesting how that rose to the top. When looking at that category itself, does anybody want to talk about sort of the priorities or what we're thinking in terms of where we'd like to see and kind of how much we'd like to see? We have a couple things we have to decide again: limited amount of money, priorities. Are we going to be doing a couple big projects? Are we going to be doing a bunch of small projects? You know, sort of where do we stand with that? So just general thoughts. I mean, I'm kind of talking a lot. So why don't I let some space for other legislators to talk about this questions document? Or anybody from the Legislator Sperry?
Well, I mean, as per the conversation that we've been having in the presentation that was just made on that response for question two, we have community kitchens and food security. So obviously I feel like that could be merged. Personally, I had rated expanding broadband low. Because, and I don't know if Chris can speak to this, but I know when we went to the NYSAC conference, there was a lot of conversations about the state doing like work and programs around broadband. So my personal feeling was like, let's leave the broadband up to the state, you know, and not like pull money out of ARPA to be doing stuff like that, unless it's stuff that is necessary right now.
Sure. I actually have a little bit of an update on that. So tomorrow, Ken Juris from Budget and myself are meeting with Senator Hinchey and her chief of staff, and it's on the state budget, and the two pieces are broadband and housing, so we can understand more about the initiatives and how we're going to be able to access the funds, because Senator Hinchey was instrumental in making sure that those funds are going to flow directly to the localities. I think I spoke about this last time, Comptroller Gallagher is actually put together kind of a task force and is organizing the different supervisors. I believe she said there's 12 or 13 that are really most affected when it comes to getting that hard wire connection or just getting any connection. So I do think that with that group, the local mapping effort, understanding the levers to pull in order to get the funds down here, I agree. I think that we've got enough balls in play here where we should be able to access the funds without using ARPA to do so. I'll make sure that whatever I learn from the senator tomorrow as well, that I'll make sure to feed back to this group as well, just because obviously we all have that interest.
Thank you.
Third piece, the federal government. So there was an effort in the 2021 state budget where the state mandated by law that the providers, the cable providers, provide low cost connection at 100 megabytes per second to everybody based on income. That was immediately challenged in court and it's never been implemented. I think the president just announced a deal with a lot of the larger national cable companies that they will begin to offer this because there is two pieces to the broadband equation here. And one is literally having any access via hard wire or wireless. The other part is being able to afford reasonable speed access. So I think that if the federal piece comes into play with the deal, maybe that'll begin to help people there. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you very much. Other comments on those priorities that are there as we see them? I like the idea of merging the community kitchens and food security, so that'll clearly bump that up to the highest level. Legislator Levine.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate, you know, my support and belief that I think workforce development is critically important, that we really do need to make sure that we, you know, make sure that that is high up on the list for consideration for the remaining ARPA money. You know, this is something that we need to be making sure, you know, in our previous discussions with, you know, with members of the committee talking about film production and green technology. These are things that are going to pay dividends going forward for our county and for our residents and for our young people. So I just wanted to reiterate my support for this, and I want to make sure that this is something that you know is going to be, you know, a number one in my eyes on the list of what we should be looking forward to do with the remaining ARPA money. So critically important, and I think it's and I think it could dovetail with things like the community kitchen. I think workforce development and the community kitchen with Cornell Cooperative. I think we could find a way to merge these together to kill two birds with one stone. So thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Chris.
That also, when I emailed back to you, like looking at workforce development parts, that is something that we haven't really focused on. So I would love to put together a group of Director of Economic Development, Tim Wiedemann, as well as the Director of OET, Sharon Williams, who work in the field on both the economic development side, but also workforce side. I don't know if we want to have them just come here and we're able to do a sit, like, because this is a comfortable setting where we can kind of just talk about things. If we could replicate something like that and focus with those two people here as resources, I think we could come up with some really good creative ideas. So I'd be happy to do that. And I think they would enjoy that as well.
Legislator Sperry.
Thank you. I know that the budget for Ulster Community College comes, you know, from us, but I don't even know, like, what are the options for pathway? Like, if we wanted to put forth some type of workforce development and we wanted to collaborate with Ulster, I don't even, like, I'm not even sure how that would happen.
Sure. So So that would be my third invite is Chris Marks. So Chris Marks is at SUNY Ulster and does workforce development. So he's part of that conversation with Tim and Sharon as well. In terms of their budget, so they craft their own budget and then they submit it to the Ulster County Legislature because of that weird kind of relationship we have with them. But they're currently in that stage of crafting it, and I believe that it'll be presented in June. So I mean, Jamie Capuano, who's their direct VP of administration, I can reach out. I have a call with her tomorrow on a water thing, but I can just ask her about it. Is there, does the budget process stop us from entering into some partnership? I doubt it will, but I'll at least ask that question to make sure. But Chris Marks is certainly the third person to throw in this, to this mix.
Great. Because, you know, I know I don't, well, I'm not sure if you know, but part of the conversation that we've been having around the meat processing facility is the fact that even if we could get it in the county, there's a labor issue. And, you know, it would be a wonderful collaboration to perhaps get some folks from the Culinary Institute to come in and teach, you know, that type of work and train folks, you know, so perhaps there's like a, you know, a pathway for culinary or, you know, that type of thing. You know, and if we look at this area, like what are we known for, right? Like agritourism, things that have to do with either farming or making something. So like those types of workforce development. Obviously we have a huge medical industry here, right? So looking at the categories that we're like super known for and also where there's huge gaps in employment and like focus on like those three or four or five things and set up some programs that we can collaborate with the community college. And if I might just go one step further while I have the room, as you know, a college professor at SUNY New Paltz, you know, I'm all, and also as somebody who grew up in a blue collar family with a welder for a father and a mom who worked for GE my whole life, I tell my students this all the time, like college is not for everybody, but we need informed citizens. So if somebody's doing a workforce development program through SUNY Ulster, I would so love for them to have the opportunity to do liberal arts courses at either SUNY New Paltz or at Ulster so that we can have more informed, engaged citizens that are voting. Okay, I'm done.
That's great. Thank you. Nate.
Okay. I just wanted to, I was looking at the responses to the first question and thought this would be appropriate time to provide the committee with a little information. We did, so on May 6th, the application deadline closed for the nonprofit grant. We did receive quite a number of applications, over 100. And we, for completed applications, we are close to $3 million in ask. And I'm sure as we get into the work with the committee, more will come out of it, but it was quite a response.
Thank you for letting us know that. Appreciate it. Legislator Lopez.
Yeah, just a quick comment. Actually, I'm kind of surprised that housing is all the way on the bottom, considering for the longest time in the legislature, some of the loudest voices were always lobbying and talking about the housing crisis, or if we only had the funds in order to, come up with a solution. And now that we have the funds, I saw that pie chart, what was it, our last... our last meeting, and housing, well, spending for housing only accounted for about 3% of the total monies that were spent. So that's something that I would like to still consider. And I know that that'll take, if we went in that direction, would definitely take up a large chunk of the balance of the remaining monies, but I'm also for larger projects and not really smaller projects. Smaller projects always kind of remind me of the, yeah, the Ellenville Million type projects. And I know everybody always beats that up, but yeah, it kind of left me a little bit bitter. It's something that I don't want to see. Yeah, a path that I don't want to see us going down again. So
thank you. I did want to clarify one thing about the spending that we've done on housing. In the pie chart itself, we broke up two pieces that were actually really one piece of housing. So I think the total spending on housing was, am I right, Amber, it's like 8% or 9%? If you add in the land bank plus the housing that we supported for the Silver Gardens and
quality was 700,000 on Elizabeth Manor, 1.5 for the jail demo, and then $1 million for the land bank.
I knew somebody could reel that off.
The jail demo is not included because it's not been approved.
Not approved yet. Yeah. Right.
But if that gets approved, I think it'll take us to about 10%.
Oh, Silver Gardens.
Yeah, Silver Gardens, exactly. I think it'll probably take us to 10% of the pot, something like that. I'm riffing right now, but somewhere in that arena. So, but fair. I hear exactly what you're saying. And I also agree with you that that's a big money ask. So I think if we went down that road, we could spend the 10 million like that, you know, it could be one project or you know, two projects. So, but noted for sure. Chris, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I think Legislator Lopez brings up an interesting point, and this would be, if we thought back to where we were last April, May, and June and developing these things and thinking that all the ideas were set and we'd stick to that plan, we didn't. And I think we're better for it. I think that while we do have this $10 million pot, he brings up a really good point that housing is still a major priority. And we did have the idea and we were engaged in trying to get Chizzards. That would have been another piece of the puzzle here to, it would have provided, I think there was like 50 something units within there. And we would have done something similar with Elizabeth Manor, but it didn't work out. So there may be other opportunities out there that we haven't yet fully fleshed out that they, you know, I know Mark is engaged in that area where he is looking at different locations. So Elizabeth Manor will become temporary emergency housing for families. But we still have other populations that would certainly benefit from this. And it would certainly take away from the problems that are caused by placing people in these hotel motels which is fairly expensive. It's, if you place somebody in one of those really awful places, it's like $70 a day. That's $2,100 a month. Yeah. That's a nice place. So it's just, you start running through the math on these things. If we could, again, like take $1 million or do a $2 million thing, and then all of a sudden house another 35 families or whatever it is, maybe that opportunity still exists. Maybe we don't have to jump on everything right now and we find a way to do that again. I think we'd certainly be open to it. So that's all I wanted to say on that.
Thank you. Legislator Sperry?
You know who needs housing? Farmers. And so if we could couple that with like the food security category, and if there's a way that we could find or like rehab some housing where folks that are working on in the farms or like farm families or whatever, like that would be the trifecta.
Yeah, we're about to have a huge farming project that's going to happen in the southern part of our county, and those folks who are working there are going to need housing.
That's right.
It's reality. So, great. So, Legislator Levine, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with what Legislator Sperry was just saying in terms of, you know, there, and especially if we could figure out a way to you know, figure out some. How for farm workers who are transient, you know, they follow the seasons. You know, they for many, many, many years have had issues with, you know, with housing, you know, when they're coming to our, you know, farm locations in our county and in our region. And, you know, especially considering how many hours that they're working out in the fields, you know, they, you know, we really do need, you know, housing, that's sustainable and permanent for them to be able to, you know, have a standard, a quality standard of living. So I think that's a great point that she made, and I just wanted to reiterate my support for that. I think well-made point. Thank you.
That's great. Can I bring up the couple areas that we haven't talked about that are on this list? So we haven't talked about transportation. And I'm aware that there's critical needs for transportation. And I'm also aware of the fact that the county has done pretty well last year. And I'm wondering, are the ARPA funds the place to support transportation, or should we look to the county funding for transportation? I would just love to hear thoughts on that.
So transportation in terms of like,
you know, it was just a general category on here called transportation. I think, I don't even know who wrote it down. So if anybody wants to claim who wrote transportation and what they were talking to specifically, that would be great.
But, I mean, I know in terms of like UCAT and public transit, I've got the new director on board in terms of we're going to be looking at routing, scheduling, the whole thing. We're also looking at ways of how we can provide more equitable access in terms of those who are using it or should have access to it. So if we're placing people in temporary housing, should we also be giving them a monthly free bus card? We're trying to come up, we were actually spitballing today with legislator Yucatel on some of these issues just to try and figure out ways that we can expand access to the service and make it just easier. We also have this, we're in a competition. So we're in a planning grant now with this micro transit group called VIA. And this is in partnership, it's VIA, our Department of Planning and our UCAT, and this is through NYSERDA. So we're one of six finalists. And I think that micro transit is probably going to be the next kind of like transportation as a service type of thing, where you're gonna be able to more efficiently get people around rather than on fixed route bus systems that only travel on main thoroughfares. So I'll try and get you guys all more information on that one, because that may answer some of those questions. Even if we don't win the grant, micro transit is kind of the next evolution of public transit. So I certainly think, I think that may be hopefully what we're talking about here.
Is this the $10 million grant that I was hearing about?
Yeah, I believe it's $10 million. Yeah, it'll hit, I guess it's Ellenville, Kingston, and then I think they're expanding it to New Paltz, the pilot that they would be trying to do. So I'll get you guys I'll get you the VIA packet, just whatever the public information is on that. And hopefully right. That'll.
It's like an on-demand kind of idea. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you for that. The other category that we really haven't talked much about is the arts. And I know that's probably something I put on because I'm a big supporter of the arts and would love to see it. But I actually feel as we're having this conversation, I'd really like to weave the arts into workforce development. I think that is a better ask of ARPA funds to do it that way and figure out other ways to support the arts, which I think the county should do on a consistent level. But that's for another time and place. So what I'm doing is I'm actually kind of crossing off things from this list, and I'll tell you what I have left so far. So I have food security, which has now been paired with community kitchen, so that's all one pot. I've got workforce development, which is looking at sort of some broad categories such as medical, green industry, culinary, and film production. So those are the broad categories I wrote down. And then I took broadband off until we have further information. I took this line off that's projects which expand the subject of use, because that could go into a lot of different categories. It wasn't very specific. So I took off the arts, I took off transportation, and then I left supporting mental health efforts in schools, because I think that takes our youth category that we feel strongly about that. And then I left housing on, and I left that on like if a great project comes up kind of thing, you know, let's leave that. So does that feel like a good way to start to pare it down a little bit in terms of priorities and buckets? Legislator Sperry.
I just am wondering if you could put housing with the category of food security and workforce development, because I think that workforce housing is also an issue, not just with agriculture. You know, we're going to see that with Cresco. It's, you know, one of the questions that kept coming up during the IDA interviews is like, which comes first, you know, like housing or jobs. And yeah. So I feel like they kind of go hand in hand for
that's
both.
It. That's interesting. Yeah. So if I put specifically workforce housing, that's interesting. Cause I haven't heard the push for that so specifically. And I think it's a really interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Legislator Green, hello.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. Yes. I strongly want housing to stay as a possible ARPA project. I've been in fairly regular communication with Director Dennis Doyle in planning. And it's my understanding that there is a project close to ready that would help to do energy retrofits, which are absolutely critical for achieving the climate goals, New York's climate goals, for low and moderate income housing as part of a training program. So it would include workforce development, our own department and employment and training, and BOCES and SUNY Ulster. There's a whole green careers pathway that this could be a pilot project for, and it would provide funding for energy efficiency and also beneficial electrification. But mostly the great importance is what a difference it makes to do an energy retrofit on a building. And we're even working out how to ensure equity with tenants, the relationship with landlords and tenants. And I believe NYSERDA has worked that out. You know, it is possible that could get funding down the road from infrastructure, but it's been a project that I put in support for months ago. And I was told that it's just about ready to be proposed. So I would like to ask, Deputy Contreras, who else, Chris Kelly, to look into that and report back. I don't see Director Doyle on this call. No reason, unless he was ready to present on it. And I was very favorably impressed with the farm and food security presentation. I really want to support that, especially in this area. And one of the things I'm trying to do as we teach municipalities how to do wise siting of solar battery storage and other renewable energy infrastructure is to protect our farms. In some cases, combining solar with farms, agrovoltaics, as it's now being called, can be very beneficial and protect the farms. But in other cases, it's covering over prime land, farmland in an area where farming is an important industry and provides food security. So, but let's get clarity about whether or not that potential ARPA project is going to move forward. And it doesn't have to be a multi-million dollar project. It could be a pilot project to show how well that Green Jobs pipeline can. Sorry, I have a head cold. work with the need to retrofit our buildings.
That's great. Thank you. That was the question I was going to ask. Is there a dollar amount attached to this already?
Yep.
And also, Are there other options for funding it through either state or federal funding? Those would be my two big questions about a project like that. I think it's a really worthy project, but I think we should understand the cost and explore those options. And thank you for throwing out the idea of it being a pilot, if that's something that's a more affordable option for us to do. So
I'll make sure to follow up. I know the proposal, so I'll make sure to get that.
That's great. So I want to move us along because I see it's 6:18 now, and I promised this a short meeting, and this is now turning into not a short meeting, but I do want to get us rolling. I got it. So what I think I'd like to do is I'd like to actually try and come up with some sort of rough, very rough idea of like percentage of monies left for each of these buckets that we've now kind of defined. And I know it's like, it's going to be a rough idea, but I do think at least it will give us some sort of guidance as we're looking at things. So does that sound reasonable to everybody? Okay. So it looks like Amber, I'll do some of this work with you to maybe come up with a proposal to see how we're going to kind of break down what the rest of the funds are into those priorities that we just really identified and what makes sense there. All right. And again, in respect with everybody's time, I want to kind of move us along. Is there anything else on that? We've covered a lot of the other questions actually through this conversation. So it looks like in terms of the approximate money, we'll come up with that. And I think it's going to shake down to, it looks like it'll probably land more in the 3 to 4 medium-sized projects is I think where we're talking about right now, rather than 1 or 2 really large projects. It just seems to be the direction we're heading. Legislator Sperry?
I just, you know, want to be mindful of sustainability and longevity. So obviously, if we are funding these projects now using ARPA funds, I want to just make sure that we're putting them in a position to continue. You know, obviously there's going to be some things that are going to be like, okay, like, let's get it off the ground, or like, this is a short-term thing, or blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, I'm just thinking about like the supporting the mental health efforts in schools. Like, is that going to be a 3-year pilot? Is that going to be like, oh, if this works well, like how, because I don't want to set anybody up for failure, right? And we just like, we want to make sure that if we are piloting things or if we're putting these things in motion, that even without the ARPA funding later on, they'll be able to continue.
Keep ringing that bell. I think that's an important thing that we keep thinking about. I keep asking the question and then I'll forget. So just everybody keep asking that question, because this to me is seed money and there has to be a plan for it to, we don't want these things to die on the vine. You know, we really want to make sure that it's sustainable and that there's some sort of game plan for if it does need continued funding, what's the game plan for where that funding's going to come from? So thank you for that. Legislator Levine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I agree. And, you know, ideally, we should be looking at projects that are going to, after, you know, the seed money is dispersed, that they're going to become self-sustainable and self-sufficient. And ideally, I think it would be in our best interest if we could find projects that, you know, are going to be, you know, revenue generating for themselves. You know, obviously it shouldn't be the be all end all, but I mean, that would be a very strong benefit if we could find something that's going to be able to not only just stand on its own, but thrive by using the seed money. So I agree with Legislator Sperry. I think it's a great point, and I just wanted to add my support to it. So absolutely, you know, we don't want to be throwing money away into a project that you know, is not going to be able to be you know, be able to stand on its own. So
thank you very much for that. I actually wanted to ask Deputy Executive Kelly and Nate and Molly, if you had any thoughts on the responses that we gave to the question about, are we comfortable with the use of county funds to cover the following operating expenditures? If you could just give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of COVID pods, all that kind of stuff, it's wound down. So I don't anticipate asking for any ARPA funds regarding that. Again, like with the CSN program, which we'll start to show the different reporting, and we've really hit a good stroke there now with that with implementing it. We proposed it in operating. It was the legislator's purview to use ARPA. You want to use operating, we're in. So, I mean, I don't think it was necessary to do it in the first instance, and we certainly don't, we haven't changed our position there. We're just happy to start implementing the program. And the CSEA bonuses, all that kind of stuff, it's all done. I don't have anything else operating wise on my radar that's going to extend costs. And Amber, I don't know if I'm missing anything there. I know we haven't even expended all of the different lines or the appropriations that came through. So I think we're leaving money kind of on the table that can be reappropriated at a reasonable time.
The emergency management pods is the only other thing.
Yeah. Great. So, yeah, I think we're pretty good there, though.
Thank you. Legislator Levine, do you have a question?
Yeah, just a really quick point on what Deputy Executive Kelly just said. In terms of the question that was sent out, you know, that was one of my my answers was in terms of trying to see if if there was an alternative stream to ARPA funding for the constituent service navigator in regards to, you know, the deputy county executive talking about putting it in the operating budget. I think it's something that we should have a discussion with as a committee and as a legislature. If the county executive's office thinks it might be better in operations than and not to be using ARPA money, I think we should have that discussion. So that was my answer that's on the list. And I just kind of wanted to make note of that. So I appreciate the answer from the executive's office.
Thank you. All right, I would like to wrap us up. I think Amber and I will go away from this conversation and come up with a consolidation of kind of this conversation, and we will present that back to you. Any last thoughts on the questions, or kind of do we feel like we've sort of fleshed out roughly directionally where we're heading? Great. Excellent. All right. Thank you all again for your work. Appreciate it. And we will be in touch soon. Have a great evening. Take care. Motion to adjourn the meeting. Yeah. How's that sound? Thank you.
I'll make the motion, Mr. Chairman.
And a second, please.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Otherwise, we'd be here all night.
The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all. Have a great evening.